welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Dave, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty well, aside from making boneheaded mistakes about my children's ski passes.
Uh-oh. What happened?
Oh, man. So there was this deadline that said, hey, you know, if you pick up the ski pass before Memorial Day, it's free. And I've got three kids, and it's like between the ages of kindergarten and fifth grade. And I had a sticky note on my thing here, and we were talking about, you know, on our last episode, how you manage lists and put things around. Well, this was like one of those get to it, but get to it kind of soon sort of things, but it wasn't like the top priority. And I kept putting it off and kept putting it off. And today I went back and looked at my notes. I'm like, oh, maybe I ought to do that today. And I went to the website and they're like, nope, not available anymore. And
I'm like,
oh, that's going to leave a mark.
Just wait till you tell the boss. She'll be thrilled.
Oh, yeah. I'll hear an earful for that one. That's thrilled. For sure. And I've earned every minute of it, too. Yeah, that was not a good management moment.
Yep.
How about yourself?
Oh, man. All is good. Business is good. We touched on it a bit last week, I guess, but we are in the throes of a lot of process improvement and documentation and getting up a good workflow tool. So that's been pretty cool. We're just getting to the point where we're doing about a dozen shows right now with Podcast Motor. And, that's a lot for email and tags and, sort of to-do lists. So I have now five audio guys and two people writing show notes. So it's just a lot to really keep track of in an email. So we have to kind of, get a tool organized and kicked around a lot of different options and ended up with Trello as the tool we're using for now.
Nice.
I can see at some point in the future that we'll go to something like Teamwork or Basecamp, but for real project management. But for now, we're using Trello, and it's going great. It's going great. We have the different kind of buckets that a show moves through, and we have people that assign to each card and due dates, and I can attach either files directly or just links to the Dropbox files that people need to work on. So we're working out a few kinks on the flow, just because it moves from person to person a lot. That's kind of the tough part. And then kind of how that integrates with Dropbox and Google Docs is, it's just something we're working on, but it's going great. I've had a busy time with regular work and with some other stuff. We're actually moving right now. So that's like, if I didn't need more shit in my life, we're adding to that. Yeah. So and I'm getting to the point where I have work to do every day for Podcast Motor that I kind of have to do to get a show ready or send it off to somebody, or it's done and I have to produce it and publish it. And pretty much every day I have a couple hours of work to do, which is fine because most days, kids go to bed. In the evenings, I know all the files are ready from the editor or the show note team, and I put them together and I publish them or I email them back to the customer or whatever. And, these few days where I'm working a fair amount and then moving, it is taking away those few hours that I really need to get the work done. So it's been kind of like late nights, early mornings, particularly yesterday was just a really long kind of stressful day. But what was cool is that, the team functioned great, communicated through Trello, and we put out four shows yesterday with me not working. So, so it's great. So I fired off two emails last night at like 10:30. To get shows over to customers. And so that was cool. It was cool to see the process work like it should, even though we have a few kinks in the process still. But it's kind of a testament to, one, the power of outsourcing, which we talked about before, but two, a process that is relatively automated and lets the team work autonomously without me being involved. And that's really the goal is the team is great. The team is growing. The team communicates really well. And that's really that really has ended up being kind of the first thing I look for in a team member. Is they have to be skilled, obviously, but they have to be good communicators. And if they can do that, then I know the team can work together well we have a guy that I tried out, and he actually is a really skilled audio guy and isn't a great communicator. So, you know, he did one little project for us, and I had to kind of say, hey, you know, I don't think this is working out just because you can hardly communicate on email. I don't think I can stick you on the Trello board and let you kind of rock and roll there. And so, you know, that's been not earth-shattering news, but a pretty stark realization that early on when I'm kind of screening and interviewing people, a big thing I look for is timely and effective communication, because ultimately we're a remote team. That's a huge part of, you know, what we do. So,
right. So let me ask you a question. How are you interviewing for that? Because I would say that's probably been the number one struggle I've had on my team, is that I can sort of gauge how somebody communicates a little bit over email and chat, but it's hard for me to get a real feel for that until I kind of throw them in with the team, and then they either suck rocks or they're reasonable. You know, there's no in between. So how do you interview for that right now?
Yeah. So what I've done is I found everyone through Upwork, formerly Odesk and Elance. That's kind of the conglomeration of Olance. That's the way I should have called it.
Olance. Yes. Olance, Updesk.
Right.
Work free, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a Freudian slip, I guess. So through Upwork is where I found everybody, and I send everyone a test project, and it's expected that this is not sort of a paid thing. So if it's a podcast, it's a very short one with all the pieces in place already. So they just kind of have to slap it together and clean it up. If it's show notes, it's a very simple show to write notes for. I'm looking hard for a graphic design person right now, and they all follow the same format. So it's, here is the kind of small task I need to do. Go ahead and do it and let me know what questions you have and let me know when it's done. And that's kind of the trial, is how do they communicate with me through the Upwork messaging system? And then, you know, do they understand what Dropbox is? Can they stick something in a Google Doc in the folder that we have shared? And if they can do those things, then I feel pretty good. And then I get on a call with them after they've done that, and if they've done it well and in a timely manner, and just talk to them, really. That's just a personal thing. Just to say, hey, this is kind of what we're looking at. That these are the expectations that we have for the group and what everyone else is doing. This is kind of how we get paid. And kind of going through those things. And if I get a good feel for people, then I'll move them from a project, and a project being like editing this show, which is kind of lower risk, to editing a customer show, which is, you know, higher risk, but
that's, you know, revenue, baby.
Yeah, it's revenue. And I don't want to piss off my customers, but I'll start off again with something low risk in that category, which is like not ultra timely. Like it's a show that is going out in a couple weeks, maybe. So if they totally screw the pooch, I still have time to flip it back to one of my more trusted guys that I don't even worry about the quality of the work they're putting out, because I know it's been solid for 20 or 30 episodes they've done. So that's kind of the process. I mean, it's a little project and how they communicate in and around that project and the expectations that we set, and then hopping on a quick call and then kind of easing them into it. I think the process for bringing on my full-time VA will be a little different, but I'll do the interviewing around that in a similar way, where it's mostly a communication and a personal feel that I have with this person. And then I know that will be just a lot of training that I'll have to do for them on, you know, hey, this is what Libsyn is, and this is what a podcast is, and, you know, have them run through a podcast course that I bought just to learn all the things that I know about podcasting, and, you know, have them run through some of the really in-depth online tutorials and stuff. So that's more than you asked, but that's kind of how I'm doing it right now.
Well, no, that's good. That's, you know, and it's interesting when you've got a very strong process-oriented thing like you do. Like this whole workflow has a series of steps to it, and it's a mostly non-technical workflow, except for maybe like the Audacity video or audio editing part. So you can actually sort of throw them right into the middle of it and just see how they perform. That's very interesting. When I've been interviewing technical folks, it's a different feel for me, because I have to gauge not only their technical skills, but I have to see if they're able to, you know, understand the technology and integrate all of these various things in here. And communication is kind of a secondary piece to all of that, unfortunately, really. And maybe that's where the struggle has come from, is I focused more on the technical aspects of that and made sure that they, you know, can speak Angular and that they understand JavaScript, and previously that they could, you know, read CoffeeScript as well, and blah, blah, blah. So instead of worrying about, you know, how are they talking to me? Because it was so hard just to get those technical skills that it felt like, all right, well, I got to work with what I've got now. And maybe that's been the wrong approach. I don't know. I'm kind of struggling at the moment with my front end guy who's like, he's really good at Angular, but he kind of struggles at the communication thing with me. And he's also, you know, this is sort of odd to me. He's a front end developer, but doesn't claim to be like a UI guy.
That is interesting.
And I'm like, how can you do front end development and not sort of understand the fundamentals of UIs and be kind of super anal retentive? Like when I used to do a lot of UI work, I was super anal retentive about making sure that everything lined up and the pixels looked good and the colors weren't garish and, you know, everything, that the workflow seemed to make sense and that the user would naturally go around and the tab ordering was correct and stuff like that. And he just doesn't seem to be as diligent about it. And I don't really get that. So I'm kind of scratching my head on that one right now. But
yeah. I would suck at that. I'm relatively detail oriented, but not to that extent. It's just more than I care to be, I guess. I can be very detail oriented, but it's just not my personality.
Right. Yeah. It's very much about what you want to work on. And so, you know, I need to find a better guy for that, I think.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So on the development front, things are going well though. Support Vine is trucking along.
Yeah. So on the back end, my guy, he is like kicking ass and taking names right now. I'm very excited about that. He's up to full speed. And I think this week we're actually going to have full life cycle in and out of emails. So I can be able to receive an email in and then turn around and respond to it within the tool. And all of that happens and records all of the stuff in the workflow and it gets attached to the right stuff. So that's kind of a watershed moment for the tool. That's one piece that's not been fully operational. We've had a lot of other stuff that was working, but that one thing there sort of lets me start talking to the outside world and then maybe move to an early dog fooding step with it. So I'm actually kind of excited about that. He's also spent a lot of time supporting stuff that my front end guy really needs, and there's a lot of bugs in there and API issues, and they're sort of flushing out stuff that was in from the previous regimes. And I think they've kind of got most of that stuff worked out. We had to do some technology upgrades this past week, which, you know, I put those off for as long as absolutely possible. But those technology upgrades suddenly came to a point where we actually needed to have that in order to get the integration in with another piece of our technology, RabbitMQ. So if I didn't upgrade, we weren't going to get that. And I was like, all right, well, that's sort of a key piece here. Let's go ahead and do that. Sure. So I had to bite that bullet off this week. And it turned out not to be that bad, but there's probably like a half a week's worth of lost time between the two guys while they were flushing out bugs that they found as a result of introducing the new technology, changed function calls, that kind of stuff. You know, I knew it was going to happen. I was just hoping I could put it off indefinitely. It turned out that wasn't the case. But aside from that, it's actually pretty good. The really exciting news that I have this past week is that we did sort of I'll call it a fake launch. So here's the little hack I tried, and I'll let you know how this goes, but we just did this week. So I basically am testing out the theory of whether Support Vine is going to be something that I can, you know, niche down to just WordPress-based support for now. For people selling things on WordPress through like EDD and WooCommerce, can I create a support tool that's like super awesome for that niche? So in order to go for that niche, if you want to like go out to Product Hunt and Beta List and all of these other sort of startup announcement sites, you get one shot at that, right? So what I did is I actually created a secondary brand for this, and then I created this whole website around it, and then I launched it out to those sites so that I can start collecting customers who are interested in that specific workflow.
Uh-huh.
And
this is landing page and domain and everything?
It's a landing page and domain. It's literally like a four-page site. So I got like terms of service, privacy policy, front page, and then the landing page for early access. That's it. So I threw that all up there. I specifically made it about WordPress. I created some media stuff around there. So I created like a graphic in a half an hour or whatever that represented this. And I went to this site called startuplister.com and then entered all this information in there. For $75, they listed me out to all of these websites, like 60 different websites. So by the way, if you're going to try this and you're interested in that particular service, $75 is a steal, because just think about how much time you would invest going to 60 different websites and typing in that stuff again and again and again. I can't imagine. I mean, just put an ice pick in my eye now and get it over with.
No, that's crazy.
It sounds horrible. So anyway, I've launched all of that. I am now waiting for, you know, there's like a 2 to 3 week process in a lot of these sites, and some of them you can pay to bypass the queue, and some of them you just have to wait. So I'm kind of waiting to find out which ones have accepted it and which ones are posting it and which ones I have to pay to jump the queue, and et cetera, et cetera. And then once I get that, then I can start getting more traffic driven to the site. I've already gotten a couple of signups for the early access list, which is great. I also promoted it on a group on Facebook for Advanced WordPress. And yeah, so that's my big announcement this week here of getting out there for the customer development. Looking forward to being able to start sending out a survey here pretty soon. Once I, you know, probably wait another week, and then I'll send out a little survey sort of saying, how are you doing support now with your WordPress? How's that working for you? What tools are you using around it? Are you using WooCommerce or EDD or something else? Mm-hmm. Are there any integrations you're interested in? So I can do very specific customer development around those guys and really get what that niche is missing out of there.
And so, you're collecting emails on this landing page, or do you get information from these launch sites, or how does the communication flow work?
So the launch sites basically put your site up in front of a bunch of people, and then it's up to those people to go click on your site, and then you have to have a launch or a landing page that collects email. So I've got a MailChimp list. I just slapped it up there, you know, didn't take any time at all, threw the API key in, and boom, it was done. So I'm collecting emails on there. I'm going to use that, and eventually, I'll probably transfer that over to Drip, because that's where I actually have all of my stuff for the big site. Mm-hmm. But for the mini site, I'm just leaving it in MailChimp right now because it was fast and easy. And then I'll start with that survey over there and probably migrate them over eventually. But yeah, the email collection is all on me.
Okay, interesting. And well, that's good too. I mean, that is some really lessons for you on, you know, just the best ways to collect email for that group of people too, because I think it's probably a little different for everybody. You know, what sort of opt-in incentives you can offer that work, and pop-ups or no pop-ups or exit intent and all those things, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm going very low-tech, low-key on this one here. There's no exit intent pop-up. There's no real incentive, just other than, you know, if you're interested, come check it out. So we'll see what happens from that.
And how many what would you consider a successful sort of fake launch campaign in terms of email collection?
I would say my personal goal is to try to get 100 emails out of this.
Okay.
I'll be happy if I get around 25, because then I've got a substantial body of people to talk to.
Yeah, sure.
But 100 is where I would be shooting for on this mini launch.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. And then this puts the big launch, the real deal, a month or two away?
Yeah, I mean, the real launch is going to depend very much on what kind of feedback I get during this mini launch here, and what they feel like is missing, or what they feel like they really need to be successful, or what they need to jump on board. So I'm going to, you know, I don't want to specifically throw something out there that I can't hit until I understand more. I mean, that's the whole point of the customer development phase at this point.
Yep. That's great. I mean, that's so powerful, right? I mean, that's talking to your exact audience without kind of lifting your skirt and saying, hey, this is what we have already. You can talk to people ahead of time and then go back and tweak before you really launch. I love it.
Yeah. Now we'll see if this all works. And, you know, my guess is that if a lot of people started using this particular technique here, that these startup listing sites would probably find ways to clamp down on it. But at the moment, it's a hack, so we'll see how it goes.
I don't think it's not insincere or anything. I think, you know, it reminds me of the Tim Ferriss, you know, approach of put up a landing page, drive people to it, have them opt in, and then learn from that and iterate until your process is exactly right. That's kind of what he said 10 years ago in 4-Hour Workweek.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, if there's a loophole in the system that you can exploit to be able to relaunch and get more people from the same source, I mean, you know, it's not like it says in their terms of service, you can't do that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, so I have a question. This is something that I've personally been sort of anxious to learn more about, and it's on a sort of personal level, but you've talked in the past about studying Buddhism and meditation, and I'm needing some tranquility in my life these days.
this is something. Who isn't?
Yeah, well, no, that's true. That's exactly right. I think this is something not unique to me or you or our situation. I think it's something that everyone faces, is the stress of starting up is real and is substantial sometimes. And there's a lot of different ways people deal with it. In one of the Slack channels I'm in, we was talking about this the other day, and you know, it's exercise and eating reasonably well and not drinking too much and getting a lot of sleep. But one of the things that a lot of people talk about is meditation. And you are the resident guru on meditation. In a relative sense, at least. But so can you tell me and I guess tell everybody a little bit about kind of how you got into it and what you learned and kind of what you're taking away from it on a kind of ongoing basis?
Sure, sure. Well, let me just throw out the caveat first that I'm probably the world's worst Buddhist. I suppose I could do worse. I mean, my wife and I studied with a community when we were sort of pre-kids and when we had our first two daughters. By the time that we got daughter number three, it became more difficult to, you know, spend that one day a week where both of us could actually go and practice with the community and listen to the lectures and do the group meditations and stuff like that. And so we started doing it more on our own and more using like recorded meditations and online stuff. But even then, I wouldn't say that we're like super awesome about it now and keeping up with it. But there are definitely some things that have continued to stick with both of us. Now, I will say that, you know, a lot of the stuff that I find on meditation out there is absolutely bang on for beginners. You know, you get and you just want to find something that kind of resonates with you. There's a lot of different techniques. There's a lot of different paths that you can go. There's no one path, I think, that works for everybody. You know, I studied under a Tibetan Buddhist teacher for a while, and then later he switched over to a Theravada, which is more like Thai and I'm trying to think of the other sect, Malaysian. Nah, I might not be right on that one. Anyway, it's more like Thai Buddhists. And then later he basically kind of stripped out all of the Asian mystique to it and really sort of boiled it down to the core essence that an American audience could really resonate with. And it got down to things like just mindfulness of breathing, for example. So there's a fancy Sanskrit word for that called anapanasati. But it really comes down to just understanding how breathing can affect your body. And if I had to say, what's the one thing that I still do to this day and that I work with my kids and that I use when I get really worked up, it's that one thing right there. It's just being mindful of my breath. It's as simple as understanding this. When we take deep breaths, we get calmer. And if you take short, shallow breaths, you kind of get worked up and hyper. I mean, we all know this intuitively. If somebody's hyperventilating, what do? You say, calm down. Yeah, exactly. Because you know that breathing right there is a clue to you that they are having these freakout problems going on in their mind. Uh-huh. So the insight from Buddhism is that the breath controls the mind and the mind can control the breath, because we can actually say to our lungs, you know, breathe deeply, and you can make yourself breathe deeply. Well, it turns out that breathing deeply turns around and calms your mind. So this becomes a very awesome positive feedback way for you to deal with stress or deal with anxiety. When my kids get totally worked up about something, or they're crying and they're very emotional, or they get hurt or something like that, the first thing my wife and I do is we tell them to stop and to breathe. Because they forget to do that. And it's very effective. It's very simple. It's easy to remember. It's something that they can do you know, we have to remind them a lot. Hey, are you breathing? Can you breathe? Take some deep breaths. You know, they'll come in and say, oh, I can't sleep, Dad. And I'm like, did you try some deep breathing? And they're like, well, no, that doesn't work. I'm like, well, actually it does. All right, let's go, let's go sit down and try it again. And so, you know, you have them try breathing 10 times. And then after they do 10 breaths like that, you can see that they've kind of come down a little bit and have them do another 10.
Uh-huh.
And then pretty soon, you know, after about 30 or 40, they're kind of sleepy and then they're maybe passing out on you or ready to, you know, be on their own at that point.
And just for reference, your kids are how old?
My kids are 5, 7, and 10.
Okay. So prime kind of wild and crazy days.
You know, really, I don't think there's an age at which the breathing thing is limited to effectiveness.
Yeah.
Because here I'm in my mid-40s, and, you know, when I get worked up, like I remember I was 2 years ago, I was getting ready to get on stage for MicroConf for my attendee talk, and I felt pretty anxious. You know, anytime you stand up in front of 250 people, even if you have a lot of public speaking experience, you're going to feel a little anxious. I've never heard of anybody that doesn't feel some kind of anxiety, even if it's just a little bit. It's worse with some people and it's, you know, very light in others, but there's something. There's always something there. So I was kind of in the middle of that scale and I was kind of having to stand off to the side and just breathe. I just had to remind myself to breathe and take those deep breaths so that I wasn't going to take that anxiety with me on stage. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that right now, you know, with all the stress that's going on in your life, if there was one thing you could do that's simple, it's easy, you can do it anywhere at any time. It doesn't matter if you're driving or getting ready to go to sleep or in the middle of a meeting. You know, the only thing you really can't do it is when you're talking. Pretty much everything else, you can do it. You can breathe. So
that's awesome. I think about my family and my kids even. We have my little guy is almost 3, my daughter's 4.5. And I guess we do it in a roundabout way. It's not as direct as, you know, just take a breath, but it's definitely stop what you're doing, kind of calm down a little bit, focus on what the problem is and how you're feeling. So I guess we do that inherently a little bit with the kids, and especially the little guys. He's just starting to understand himself and his emotions, and it certainly helps him a lot more than our daughter. But I have used in the past Headspace, which is great. It's kind of this guided meditation iPhone app that the first 10 episodes are free, and then it's a whatever monthly deal. That's very reasonable, I think, or it's a package deal, I forget. But it's pretty good, and I don't do it often enough. But when I do it, I definitely feel very different. I feel just really relaxed and very mindful of everything, just kind of like how I'm perceiving things in my life and in our current environment and everything. And I don't do it every day, but I think if I did it every day, I would have a ton of clarity around, you know, focus, like what's really important, because you just took 10 minutes to try to shut your mind off. And then when it starts back up, the focus should be really evident and not all the BS that goes around with emails and kids and noise and traffic and school and things like that. I think if you took 10 minutes to shut your mind off, at least for me, and I meditate in the evenings mostly, which is probably the worst time to do it. But when I'm done, then I say, okay, you know, it's 8:30 at night. For the next 2 hours, I'm going to do X because that's just, it's obvious that's what I should do.
Mm-hmm. So I would probably correct one thing, only because I had a teacher that harped on this a lot about shutting your mind off. So really, the goal of meditation is to not become a mindless zombie robot.
Okay.
Which it kind of sounds like it, you know, depending on who you're listening to and how you take what they're saying. The idea of meditation is to become familiar with your mind and understand it. So The practice of meditation, at least as I understood it through my teacher, was to get you comfortable with how your mind works and then understanding what things trigger it and how you can bring it under control. So that's where things like the breathing techniques come in. there's a lot of stuff that you can talk about that is related to that, but fundamentally the breathing techniques are really the root of all of them. In fact, if you go to pretty much any basic meditation class in the Zen, Tibetan traditions, I'm pretty sure most of them start with just focusing on your breath. Like for 10 minutes, they have you try to focus on your breath. Now, this freaks most people out because they suddenly realize that there's all this churning going on in their mind. But the point of that exercise is to become aware of that churning and that you have this distraction going on around you, but that distraction going on around you is also inside of you. And that's sort of the key insight to get you started down that path. Like if you're aware that distractibility already exists, then you can try to remove yourself from a distraction environment to help keep your mind from getting wound up and agitated and kind of crazy. And then, even your example that you talked about, you said, well, meditating in the evening is probably not the best, but then you get 2 hours of highly focused time out of it. So that 10 minutes of meditation is obviously giving you that calming down and refocus your mind for the next 2 hours. So I would say, if that's working for you, fantastic. When I was doing meditation, I couldn't do it in the evening. I was just – I felt sort of exhausted and drained. The times that were best for me were almost always the early morning, like the first thing after I got up. It's very hard to get up sometimes and just do that. And then you'd splash water on your face and just kind of get your butt to the cushion and sit down. And then once I could get there, then I would find better success during the day because I had that time to focus my mind and it wasn't full of chatter and it hadn't gotten agitated from all the stuff from the day and, nothing about my kids or stuff going on at work or any of that. I just would have some time to kind of bring myself into focus and really put the day in perspective at that point.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, so you studied locally in Denver or did you go somewhere to study?
I studied locally here in Denver. Yeah.
Okay. How did you connect with that person?
Well, this was actually through my wife. So my wife was already a member of the community and we were dating at the time. So she invited me to come check it out. She wanted me to see what it was about because it was important to her. And I said, yeah, sure, cool, I'll do that. And I had actually sort of informally studied Taoist tradition because I had been studying martial arts prior to when we met. And so when she let me go to invited me to the Buddhist thing, it was kind of a natural fit for me. It flowed already from some of the things that I was interested in. So yeah, it was just kind of the next evolutionary step, I guess. And we both really enjoyed it. And then we both started going on retreats together. And then she did a 30-day retreat. And then I did a 30-day retreat. And then kids came along and, things kind of fell apart from there.
They kind of had a hard time with it or didn't?
No, not the kids. It was just us. We had a hard time trying to find time to be able to attend classes and do the meditation on a regular basis.
Sure.
That's just my personal thing at this point.
Yeah. No, I can. It's I don't know. For me, it's falls into the same bucket as exercise where, it's important. It's good for you. You should do it. But it is one of the things that goes out the window pretty quickly. And that's not right probably, but
that's the reality,
spending time with your family and eating and working and having a little bit of downtime are all come first in the reality of a lot of our lives.
Absolutely. That's a perfect way to think about it. That's exactly how it got treated.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, I just think about, my current situation. So we're selling our house right now. And that's kind of a whole nother topic, I guess, is sometime I do want to talk about sort of like what we've seen as, sort of like materialism and kind of this rat race that we all get in and the transition that we're going through as a family into kind of taking a step away from that and kind of downsizing our lives a little bit and our responsibilities. And part of that is not owning a house, at least right now, and helping us to, jump on this startup bandwagon and being kind of a self-funded business founder or owner and making that a little easier in terms of the responsibilities that we have. But also, so along with that, I guess, selling the house, getting rid of some of our stuff, but it also is kind of very stressful at this point. And so managing that stress has been, you know, something that's front of mind, at least. So I'm going to take some of the advice that you're dishing out and do some meditation, do some breathing exercises and mindfulness. And I think, you know, my wife is very into it, and that's really important too. It sounds like you got into it because of your wife. And I think your significant other always has to be on board with this kind of thing. Cause it's, I don't want to say borderline religious, but it is sort of borderline religious in that it is a bit of faith and practice that you're getting into on a regular basis.
Well, sure. This affects really every aspect of your life. And if if you want to bring this into your family and bring it into your world, you know, you kind of want everybody to agree that this is something that you all want to undertake, and that there's value to it, that there's benefit. And if not everybody's on board, it's going to be hard for everybody to support that. So yeah, absolutely. You gotta have it. And, you know, like I said, breathing is the most fundamental natural thing that we do as human beings. So, you know, might as well start from first principles and use your breath to calm yourself down.
Nice. Nice. Well, that is an excellent place to wrap it, I think, for this week.
I think so. Everybody remember to breathe.
Everybody remember to breathe. And, you know, so our little take home for this week, I think, is I would love to hear more stories of what people have done in dealing with stress and meditation and breathing practices and mindfulness. I think it'd be super interesting to keep the discussion going. So let us know, you know, how you're dealing with it and what you've done to help in that regard.
That sounds great. Looking forward to seeing it in the comments.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Dave, I'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
All right.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.